All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to leave up holiday decorations year-round. Others have the need to use their garage as practice space for their new metal band. And because each homeowner has unique needs, GEICO helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with GEICO.
Hello, friend. Welcome back to Foul Play. This season, I'm bringing you the story of Charles and Jennifer Cha. This is episode 3, Remains. As a reminder, as well as myself and Wendy, throughout this season, you will also hear from retired detective Alan Fox and retired detective Ron Dreher.
I'm Alan Fox. I live in Reno, Nevada, and I'm retired from law enforcement for over 30 years. I've worked robbery homicide for 10 years.
My name is Ron Dreher. I went to work for Reno on March 15, 1973, and then I retired on July 23, 1999.
We have been asked to cover this case by Alan and Ron to see if anyone remembers anything about Charles and Jennifer. Always remember, however insignificant something might seem to you, it may be a vital piece of evidence that helps the police to work out what happened. So if you have any information at all, please do come forward. You can contact Reno Police directly, or if you prefer to stay anonymous, you can contact me, and I will pass on the information for you. This is a very sad case about two young children who went missing in 1989 and whose bodies were not discovered until the following year. This is a murder case that has never been solved. Please note that while we are not including graphic details in this series, we are dealing with children, so this may not be suitable for all listeners.
In episode 1, we heard how Charles and Jennifer Cha went missing after leaving school on the 18th of October 1989. How their mother Anne was away in Taiwan and their grandmother was looking after them. In episode 2, we looked at the circumstances around their disappearance. In this episode, we are skipping forward to the 25th of July 1990, almost 9 months after Charles and Jennifer disappeared. During this period, the police investigation continued, but there were no sightings of the children and no clues as to what had happened to them after school on the 18th of October the previous year.
July 25th, 1990, a Caltrans worker is working along the road that goes through Portola, California. That's a road you would take, maybe going to Chico, Gray Eagle. There's a big golf course. There's a big recreation community just east of Portola. A lot of people in Reno own property or small lots or trailer spaces where they go out there. It's beautiful forest. They have a lot of weddings and stuff go on out there. A lot of townhouses where people go out and spend their weekends, particularly in the summer. And between Portola and Gray Eagle, there's a large pullout, and I'll show you that when you come to Reno. A Caltrans worker, July 25th, 1990, pulls off to relieve himself, to urinate. And he steps over to the edge, and there's a drop-off. And if you were going to urinate there, you'd probably step down quite a bit so no one would see you because it's still a pretty nice pullout, pretty big. And he sees a hole in the ground and he sees what looks like a skull. So he reports it and Plumas County Sheriff comes out. It's their jurisdiction and they begin to investigate. And sure enough, they find the mostly decomposed bodies of two children. We're not missing two other children within probably 500 miles radius, but Plumas County gets it digged up. Eventually, they realize it's our two missing kids, Jennifer and Charles. Their names are spelled C-H-I-A, but it's pronounced Cha. So now the murder investigation begins in earnest. At that point, they move the investigation from youth services to robbery-homicide. And that's when Ron Dreher gets involved, the main detective.
And Ron tells us how he became involved in the case once the remains were found.
We really don't get involved until July of 1990.
And what was significant about that date?
When they found the bodies.
What does the juvenile department do differently versus when your department, the homicide department, takes over?
They are in control of the case, first of all. And a couple of detectives that were assigned to that were the ones responsible for going out, for example, when the feds got involved, going out with them and doing that. We don't really don't get involved. The FBI came to us. Dave Spencer was the head FBI agent at the time, who ultimately becomes part of our major crimes unit and all this other stuff. But when he gets to us and says, you guys got to get involved in this. This is more than just some kids being missing. And even then, they involve the search parties. They do all this stuff, but juvenile is the one handling that. When the two detectives that were working that case were involved, they go with the feds, they do everything. Robbery homicide basically stays out of the picture. We continue doing what we're doing, which is robbery homicide cases.
Can you tell me about what that looks like, the event that happens when the bodies are found?
We get a phone call from Sergeant Pitts, Steve Pitts. He's the sergeant in charge of homicide. And it says that Plumas County had found some remains. And as it turned out, those remains were children. And you are now going to be involved in the case. Myself and my partner, Joe Dubczynski, the two of us, we don't go to the gravesite at that point. We don't go anywhere. We start back in Reno. The rest of the detectives that we had are other members of our people. They go to the site. They go out with the forensic people. They start doing all that aspect of it. We collect the evidence. They collect the evidence from Plumas County. They bring it into where the autopsies are performed in Reno. And that's the involvement. I'm out of that. We're back here trying to say, okay, now we have a homicide. Now we know the kids have been found dead. We didn't know the cause of death at that point. But we know that they're not alive. We know that they were buried. And we know that some Caltrans worker found them when he went down to use the restroom. And it's a deer kill area where they throw roadkill. That's what we know. And that's all. So we go to the detectives at that point that were working the case and say, okay, what have you done? And it's sad at that point because what we get is we get a case that's 9 months old where the paperwork's about that much. So we have to go back and we have to put this case back together from day one. What would you do different? What did you do? Who did you interview? Who did you canvass? Who did question after question? Which really ruffles some feathers because now nobody wants to be questioned about why you didn't do this or why you didn't do that. What was your leads? What were you doing? On and on. But we have to do what we have to do. So that's what Joe and I do, my partner and I. And we start putting the case together.
To give you an idea of what the location of the remains is like, Alan took Shane there to have a look around. We have some clips to share from that trip.
Now we're in Plumas County. We drove through Lassen. Plumas is the county that the kids were buried in. Probably have another 15 miles ago. This is really nice out here.
Same like a voice. Just drive to.
Yes and no. Generally, yeah, the people tend to dump bodies in places they're familiar with, unless they're not familiar with the area, like truck drivers. It's really easy digging out there. Me and my partner, we brought a shovel out there and a cadaver dog in case there was another site somewhere near there. And the dog slightly indicated in one area, so we started digging, and it was easy digging. It's always a risk of putting a couple bodies in your trunk and then trying not to get pulled over late at night. Because late at night, cops are looking for something to do.
It took an hour for Alan to drive Shane from Charles and Jennifer's home in Reno, Nevada, to the site where the bodies were later found. and along that road there was a police checkpoint, which seems like a big risk for somebody concealing the bodies of two children in their vehicle. Alan stops on the site, and after a quick mic and battery check, they get out to explore the area.
All of this was flat. This wasn't dug out like this. And some of the trees have been cut down, and obviously some of the trees are larger. Now there's a fire road right here. Before they did this, you could have pulled your vehicle down here and not be seen. But the bodies were over here. See where that sign is? That was there then. And in between that opening and the trees, there were more trees. They cut those down and the trees were a little smaller, but they were right down there. The shovel was about somewhere right down here, which likely you could have used it to walk back up the hill and then tossed it from here. And you could have, back then, you could have pulled right up to the edge. And that's, well, you say about 90 feet down to where they were. The Caltrans worker, so I've never talked to them, and I'll still try to, but it's been so long. I'm guessing he didn't want anybody to see him urinating up here, so probably walked down to level ground around there and then saw it. And then there were a couple old tires down there and things of that nature that people, you could see a tire there. And Caltrans will quite often dump roadkill off over on this side. But yeah, before I retired, actually I dug right down there, but just to the right of that tree stump. Still see the pile a little bit. And really easy digging.
Yeah, it looks like the ground's pretty loose.
Yeah, and you get a lot of the soft sand that just washes down over the years. So take it in. These power lines were here then. I don't know how good of a job they did with excavating the bodies. It would have been nice if they would have had someone who had some experience with it, but they didn't. We can walk down there. I'll show you. They were somewhere right around in here. And keep in mind, these trees were here, so that would have blocked view of anybody. There's a big tree there. These all were brought down because of the power lines, I'm sure.
Where's that fire road?
It's right over there.
This was a dumping ground that was used more than one time?
Yeah, we brought the cadaver dog out for that, and it hit right over there. It was the only place. And it wasn't, she said, I'm not real confident, but he does show some interest over there. And yeah, so we came back out and dug.
And then didn't find
it. No, but it was easy digging.
Yeah.
And then, like I said, they dump carcasses here all the time. And I guarantee you we can walk over there and we'll find some deer bones.
There was a shovel found near the burial site, which the police think could be significant. Shane and Alan talk more about the location.
Do you think the person would have had to have come up this way?
I think if the shovel is involved, and I think it is, I think, like I was explaining, you go down there and look up. What way would you walk up? And it would be a different way than you walk down because it's perceived it differently.
Yeah.
And I would walk up that way, near where the shovel was located. Then you might use it as like a walking stick to come up and toss it.
We were talking, it's trying to get the kids down there. That's a pretty big hill. It's almost like he was...
I was thinking about like
they just tossed him down.
Toss him or lay him on a large piece of cloth and drag him down?
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah.
And you grab them both by the hand, you could drag them both down there.
Yeah, that's true.
Sometimes there's more to a true crime case than meets the eye, and the same can be true for mental health. Or unwanted, disturbing thoughts you're scared to share with anyone could be signs of something deeper, like OCD, or obsessive compulsive disorder. OCD is so much more than the stereotypes about liking things clean or organized. It's actually a serious condition that causes people to get stuck in a cycle of stressful, unwanted thoughts and repetitive behaviors, which can become debilitating. One of the hardest things about OCD is how misunderstood it is. A lot of people don't realize it's OCD, and they're full of shame and often suffer in silence. And not every therapist understands OCD or is qualified to treat it effectively, which can make it difficult to find the right help. But there's good news. OCD is highly treatable with a specialized type of therapy called ERP, or Exposure and Response Prevention. With an OCD, you can do live, virtual ERP therapy with licensed therapists who specialize in ERP and OCD. So they truly understand what you're going through, even the symptoms that feel hard to talk about. NoCD even accepts over 60 insurance plans, enabling over 155 Americans to access evidence-based treatment at NoCD, covered by insurance. If you or someone you love is struggling with OCD, you're not alone, and with the right care, you can get better. To find out more about therapy with NoCD, go to nocd.com and book a free 15-minute call with their team. That's nocd.com to learn more and book a free call.
These days, work is in trouble. We've outsourced most of our manufacturing to other countries. And with that, we sent away good jobs and our capability to make things. American Giant is a clothing company that's pushing back against this tide. They make all kinds of high-quality clothing and activewear, like sweatshirts, jeans, dresses, jackets, and so much more, right here in the USA. So when you buy American Giant, you create jobs in towns and cities across the country. And jobs bring pride. Purpose. They stitch people together. If all that sounds good to you, visit American-Giant.com and get 20% off your first order when you use code STAPLE20 at checkout. That's 20% off your first order at American-Giant.com with promo code STAPLE20.
And that's what you got to do. You got to think about, okay, how am I going to do this?
Yep. So this would be, this looks like it's been pushed up.
Right? Yeah. This was all flat.
That would have been all flat. That hill would have been there.
And it would have been more on the elevation of this right here.
Okay.
If you imagine this straight across.
It would have been straight across. That's what I was thinking. So he would have been able to get a little bit closer.
Oh, he could have backed right.
Backed up right.
If it was in the trunk or the hatchback, you could back right to the edge.
Makes sense.
And then just drag him out.
Yep.
But see, now from up here, you would go, I'll walk down this way. But when you look up, you go, this would be easier to come up.
That makes sense. Yeah.
And the shovel was over there. I don't know exactly where, but they said 80 feet east of there.
Gotcha.
Which would put it here, which would have meant he didn't toss it from there because all of these trees were here.
Yeah.
It would have been from up here. Just used it to walk up and through it.
Yeah.
And if he was backed in, he could see somebody driving in, and the quicker he could get the kids out. I say he because it's always a male.
Yeah.
If it's a female, I'll be shocked.
It's amazing that the bodies of Charles and Jennifer were found at all, tucked away in a wooded area, off a highway, littered with rubbish and animal carcasses and bones. And if it hadn't been for that Caltrans employee needing to relieve himself that day, maybe they would still be there now. The police issued a press release the day after the remains were found. It said,
"Date of release, July 26, 1990. Subject, discovery of bodies of two local missing children. Date, time of incident, July 25, 1990. Location, approximately 10 miles west of Portola, California, Plumas County. Victim, Charles and Jennifer Chaw, brother and sister, 8 and 6 years old. Suspect, not applicable. Circumstances. On October 18, 1989, at approximately 1500 hours, Charles and Jennifer Chaw, brother and sister, stepped off the school bus near their home in Southwest Reno and are presumed to have walked towards their residence. Shortly thereafter, it was discovered that in fact they never reached their destination, and missing persons reports were filed, followed by an intensive, continuing joint investigation by the Reno Office of the Federal Bureau of Investigation and the Reno Police Department Investigative Services Division. On Wednesday, July 25th, 1990, a Caltrans employee working in the area of the intersection of California Highways 70, and 89, near Blair's Den, California, discovered what appeared to be the remains of two juveniles in a shallow grave just off the highway. And the Plumas County Sheriff's Office began a homicide investigation. Subsequent contact with investigative services personnel resulted in FBI and Reno police personnel traveling to the scene of the discovery of the bodies. And through comparison of dental charts, confirmation has now been received that the two bodies are in fact those of Charles and Jennifer Chaw. A joint investigation continues into the death of the two Chaw children, involving the Reno Police Department, the Plumas County Sheriff's Office, and the FBI. Any information should be directed to any of the three agencies or secret witness.
The medical examiner was unable to determine cause of death from the remains. Charles and Jennifer were identified from the clothes that they were wearing when their remains were discovered. These matched the clothes that they had been wearing when they were last seen. Investigators concluded that the children were likely murdered not long after they had been abducted, though this has never been confirmed. And no one has ever been charged with their murder. In the Reno Gazette, Charles and Jennifer's mother, Anne, remembered the last time that she spoke to her children. She said, quote, "I called from Taiwan and I talked with them and I said, you need to be good for grandma. Make sure you finish your homework and not watch too much TV," end quote. Charles and Jennifer were buried together in a simple grave with what looks like a dark granite headstone inlaid in the grass. On it, in the top left corner, there was a white image of Donald Duck carrying a bindle, which is a handkerchief with his belongings in, tied to a stick. He is walking and whistling. In the middle at the top, there is a white heart, with music script showing a treble clef and two music notes, that is surrounded by four tied white music notes. And at the top right is a white image of Cinderella, sat on an ornate chair, with one of her feet above a cushion. Below the images, there is a large brass plaque that covers the bottom half of the headstone. On the left, it reads Charles, April 20, 1981, and underneath, October 18, 1989. There is an image of a boy kneeling to pray underneath, with a teddy bear by his feet. And to the right, it reads Jennifer L, January 22, 1983, and underneath, October 18, 1989. Below is an image of a girl kneeling to pray, with a teddy bear by her feet. And in the middle at the bottom, it reads Char, brother and sister. Charles and Jennifer's mother needs peace. When she was interviewed by Reno Gazette Journal on the 30th anniversary of their death, she said, quote, "Not knowing anything, I cannot take it. They were good kids. They always helped people and helped their friends. I'm begging all the people who remember this case to help me. If you have any information, don't be afraid. Think about their mother. A mother's love is so strong."
This was episode 3 of our series, The Chaw Children. In episode 4, our final episode of this series, we will go through the evidence and the suspects that have been made public. If you have any information on Charles and Jennifer Chaw, please contact Reno Police Department. Or if you would prefer to remain anonymous, you can contact me through our website, itsfoulplay.com. Thank you for listening.
All you homeowners have unique needs. Some feel the need to paint their door a vibrant shade of blue. Others have the need to decorate their bathroom with fish, anchors, and other nautical items. And because each homeowner has unique needs, Geico helps you get the right coverage for your home and what's in it. That way, you get exactly what's right for you, even if your needs are unique. Get more with Geico.